Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded. From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office. Although, Zorba, we're missing that take-a-number ticket dispenser, you know, like the deli counter.
Right.
It looks like a big plastic whistle.
You know, that's right.
We don't have that
right.
here.
Take a number. We don't have take
Why
a number.
Why don't we have that?
Because everyone's got the number.
Oh, that's right.
You gave them the number.
800-462-7413.
That's it. Once they've got the number, that's it. They're next up.
Good call. We'll talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, that number to call from that ticket is 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And along with those calls, Zorba, we're going to have a couple healthy living topics.
Yes, we're going to talk about grief, issues with grief. How do you approach grief? It's really a serious topic that we often don't discuss. It's worth discussing, very important. And then we're going to discuss forest bathing, that is going into Mother Nature with children, what it really helps with children's mental health. And I think it's important not only for children with mental health, but it's also important for our mental health.
Interesting stuff. And what's the special recipe today?
Mango, grilled mango, sticky rice. Ooh. If you've never had mango, a lot of people have never had mango, you should try this. And if you like mango, you should try this. And frankly, everyone should try this.
Try this.
That's right. Grilled mango sticky rice.
Definitely.
I think you will like this recipe.
Stick around for that. All right. To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. Once again, that's 800-462-7413. All right. Our first caller joins us now from Billings, Montana. Hi.
Hi, Carl. This is Kelly. And I just am calling to see what Dr. Zorba would suggest my mom do with the condition that she has.
Oh, sure. What kind of condition does your mom have?
Well, ultimately, she's been diagnosed with pyoderma gangrenosum.
Pyoderma gangrenosum. So she has it. Tell me a little bit about her and where this is.
Okay, yeah. So she's 79 years old. I will say that back in the 90s, she was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, but she hasn't had any symptoms since then. So she does have an autoimmune thing going on.
So she's got pyoderma. She has infections? What's going on with her? What sort of symptoms?
No, she doesn't have infections, which is weird. So about 4.5 to 5 years ago, she developed a wound on her lower leg that would not heal. And she went to local doctors and dermatologists with no signs of healing. After about a year, they recommended
that's a long time.
Well, and it gets longer. They recommended going to Mayo Clinic in Rochester.
Okay.
So we did. And they diagnosed her as having insufficient veins.
So in other words, the circulatory system to her leg was insufficient to take care of the infection. So they recommended continuing local care. Is your mother on a statin, blood thinners, or anything like that, by the way, at the time?
I don't think that she is. I know she's on a ton of different things.
Okay. So she went to Rochester. They said local care is the way to treat it. They gave some instructions on how to do it and sent her back to Billings. Okay.
They did. And so so they tried doing some skin grafts as well. And they didn't take. After another year, the wound took a dramatic change for the worse. And she was admitted to the hospital in Billings. And a dermatologist there diagnosed her with the pyoderma gangrenosum with a completely different wrapping method that has been going on. Again, more skin grafts have been done, and she has gone to several rounds of infusions recommended by her rheumatologist.
What sort of, she has an open wound, a little bit unclear. What symptoms does she have now?
Yeah, she's got open wounds on her left leg, and they'll start healing, but then another one opens up, and they're big.
This is a problem.
So hyperbaric chamber therapy was suggested, but Medicare doesn't cover that.
Yeah,
and
Medicare does not pay for
it.
Right. Medicare doesn't pay for hypodermic chambers.
Right. But she's never had, when she was admitted to the hospital, when they diagnosed it with the pyoderma gangrenosum. They thought she had an infection, mm-hmm. but she didn't.
So,
and they have said that the gangrenosum is a misnomer.
So it's basically a circulatory issue where she simply is not able to heal her skin because of circulation problems. So she's also had circulation studies, I assume?
Well, I'm not sure about mm-hmm. circulation studies, mm-hmm. Not to my knowledge, uh-huh. and I don't know where uh-huh. she would do that.
So one of the questions I would have in a situation like this, if there's a circulatory problem, you know, did you have essentially circulatory studies to look at the arterial circulation? And then is there something that can be done with that? In other words, maybe it's not a venous problem, maybe it's an artery problem. And maybe there's not, I mean, like you said, it's a circulatory issue. So I would think, especially after she went to Mayo Clinic, they may have done something like that. But she also went to Mayo, how many years ago was it?
That was in 2021.
So she needs a second look, and she needs a look to see if there's circulatory issue that can be fixed with a stent. That would be, you know, if you came to me in my office.
She has had a stent. You know what? That, now that you mention that, if that means circulatory, she did have a stent put in.
So, and when did she have the stent put in?
I would say that was probably 2 years ago.
So, and has she been restudied since? Did things improve, by the way, after she had the stent? They did not improve.
No. Uh-huh.
So, what does your mother do? Does she walk around? Does she exercise?
At this point, mm-hmm. she really hasn't been able to.
Some of these problems are so difficult. So what would I do in a case like this, you know? Because first of all, you've gone to a tertiary place like Mayo Clinic. You've gone once. They gave some recommendations, and basically that didn't do it. Then you got to have a stent that's put in, and she has something that is not healed. What I would do if it were my mother is I would have a second look again at a tertiary institution like Mayo. That's what I would do. I would say, Look, this isn't working. We have a rheumatologist here. What else can we do? Because I'm concerned about it. Because you really, first of all, you had a recommendation from Mayo. That made sense. She now had a stent to improve circulation. That made sense. Maybe she needs another stent. But that's what I would do because you're between a rock and a hard place, and it's not an infection. It's a circulatory problem. So I would go back there. I don't have anything magic besides that. They're so good at things like this, but obviously your mother has something that has been more difficult. But I would have them do a second look because it's not getting any better and say, is there anything else to do? Symptomatically, what are your mother's symptoms right now?
Just the open wound. I mean, otherwise she's, you know, she feels pretty good. She goes bowling.
So she does her normal stuff. So what does she cover? She covers her wound with what every day? What does she cover
up? Well, that's done. She goes 3 times a week to the clinic to have them.
To the wound care clinic.
Yeah, to wound care. Yep.
Okay. So wound care covers the wound. She's still doing her normal, everything else. Her life is pretty normal, very normal, kind of normal.
Pretty normal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would go back, I would get another look. And if that's not the case, it may just be a chronic problem. Now, we deal with other chronic diseases, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, people in heart failure, COPD, chronic lung disease. Your mother, there may not be an answer to this. I want to tell you that. The answer may be a wound clinic 3 days a week to keep her going. And it may be like other chronic problems. But I would have a second look, and I would make sure she kept doing activities that made her happy and healthy.
Okay. Oh, I really appreciate your advice. Thank you, Dr. Zorba.
Oh, you're welcome. And thanks so much. Difficult problem. And thank you for sharing this.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's go to our first healthy living topic. And today we're going to talk about grief and grieving. And I wanted to open up with a letter that you gave to me, actually, that was written by, this is from 2004.
Right.
This letter was written to you from Willard Thurlow. Tell the listeners, who's Willard Thurlow?
Well, this was Dr. Thurlow. So when I was a psych major at the University of Wisconsin decades ago, I worked for him. He's a really smart guy, brilliant guy, had an audition meaning hearing, wanted to know about hearing and hearing loss and how to treat it. And he was just a great guy. And he was a radio listener. And while I was on the air, one day I received this letter, and I saved it because the letter was so remarkable.
All right, this is from Dr. Willard Thurlow. This is from December of 2004. Dear Zorba, I was listening to you on the radio. You must be proud of all the benefits you have brought to your audience. I'm 86 years old. I find myself following many of your prescriptions for a happy life. without Alzheimer's. I was just sending out Christmas cards, and I enclose a message I sent out with them. You can see that my grandchildren make my life happy and interesting.
Nice.
I'm able to communicate with them often and with my sons and daughters-in-law. My wife and I live under a halo of goodwill created by my son, Peter, who is a surgeon, just as your children will live in the halo your good works have created.
How nice.
I lost my wife 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. People don't realize ahead of time what the emotional impact will be. Our present conscious values may not adequately reflect true values. A paradox. We may have to lose someone before we recognize their true value.
Right.
People should at least once a year imagine what would happen if they lost their partner or family member or close friend.
You know, he brings up a point. So first of all, I saved letters and cards. I just sort of saved them. And then I was going through a bunch of them because I had too many of them. I have piles of them. And I happened to come across this. And my wife, a few months ago, recently died. It was a few months ago. And we were married for nearly 50 years, just a few months short of 50 years. And I saw this letter and I thought karmically, well, I'm looking at this letter that was in a box somewhere that had nothing to do with the condolence cards that I received. And I received literally about 300 condolence cards, lots of condolence cards from people I knew and people I didn't know and people who I touched their heart and people who penny touched their heart. And he brings up a very good point about grief. So first of all, a good friend of mine, Nancy, who has since passed away, she said, grief has its own clock. Grief has its own clock. It's not something like, you know, well, you know, somebody died, get over it. And people have never said that to me, but sometimes people say that to other people. And grief has its ups and downs. There are waves that come and waves that go. And he brings up a good point. Imagine a life without a loved one who you've had for many years, and maybe you'll treasure that person more when they're alive. Very important, especially if there are problems and rough edges, you know, that occur within your life or your marriage or your kids or financially. You know, all these things occur with us. But getting back to grieving, during the first year after grief, there's an increase in spousal death, and it's death from a number of causes. First of all, there's an increase in spousal suicide. That is not uncommon, and it's a bump. I can't tell what the bump is, but it's probably a 5 or 10% bump in spousal suicide, especially in long marriages. But the other issue is heartbreak. So heartbreak is not just, oh, my heart breaks, I haven't seen you. But when you're older, heartbreak leads to stress. And stress leads to adrenal hormones. And adrenal hormones that are inappropriately surging through your body because you're stressed can lead to cardiac arrhythmias and sudden death from a heart attack. And there is an increase in heart attacks in the first year after a loved one has died among older adults. And I think that's why it's important in a grieving process to have a good backbench, people you can talk to, friends and family if you have them, or going to a grief counselor, hospice, especially good hospice environments will allow you to have a grief counselor during hospice and after hospice. But seeking help during grief helps you walk through grief as it continues. And he brings up a really good point. Count your blessings. What do you have now when you don't have anyone that you're grieving with? Grief, is the G word is sort of what the C word used to be like. C word was cancer. We don't talk about it. And people didn't talk about cancer 10, 20 years ago. Now they talk about it. Grieving, people are afraid to often talk about it to a person who has lost one as if they'll catch it, as if it were an infectious disease. And I think Dr. Thurlow had a very, very good point. Think about your loved one, and that will allow you to go through grief if you lose that loved one. And we all lose loved ones throughout our lives. That's the nature of reality.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, call anytime. Leave a voicemail if you want. And let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Hey, doctor. So I have a question for you about fibromyalgia. My mom has it, and, you know, it's, you know, I've seen it throughout her life get progressively worse. And as far as I know, that's something that can be, like, genetic. So I'm in my early 30s now. Is there anything I can be doing now to, like, position myself in the future to not have those kinds of pains? I do notice, you know, as I'm getting a little older, I've got some, like, neck and back pain. And, you know, I really want to make sure I nip that in the bud. And, you know, just looking for any advice you have. Thanks.
Getting older, What was his age, Carl?
I think he said his early 30s.
Early 30s, and he's concerned about pain. I would love to have the pain that I had in my early 30s. I'd love to go back to my early 40s. How about my early 50s? Maybe even the early 60s. I mean, I've got joint pain here and there, and when he's concerned.
Grass is always greener? Is that what you're saying?
It's always greener. It's always greener. Fibromyalgia is not genetic. Let me repeat that. Fibromyalgia is not genetic. We don't have a good way of actually defining fibromyalgia in certain ways. It's really a problem, a musculoskeletal problem made up of a committee. There are major and minor signs, and we don't have a good imaging yet. It's absolutely real. It's not genetic, so he doesn't have to worry. Is there anything he should do to keep from getting it? Don't worry about it. That's one of the things you do. And stay healthy. If you've got joints that ache in your 30s, figure out what makes your joints ache so you're not aching as much anymore. Take the ibuprofen when you need it. Exercise right. And don't worry about fibromyalgia because chances are it is not in your future.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, it's time to log in to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for another edition of...
Let me guess, Facebook Feedback. Facebook Feedback. God, I wish
that was
I could
really
sing.
Good.
I wish I could sing.
Let's
you know,
re-record that.
I mean, I've got to tell you, when I was in eighth grade, I was a super high soprano. I could sing higher than the girls were in the class. And believe me, when you're in eighth grade and you're 13, you do not want to be known as a super high, as a super high soprano.
Oh, it's all right. It filled a need, right? Someone needed to sing.
Yeah, let me tell you, not the needs that I needed when I was in eighth grade and I was 13. But we are not going to go there today. We are going to go on to
Facebook feedback. All right, Zorba. Steve in Milwaukee slid into our DMs with the following message.
You know, there's ice sometimes on the street and water. You have to be careful
when
you say slid. And then when there's baseball around, like slitting into it. Go ahead.
Okay. This is from Steve in Milwaukee.
Slid. Okay. Go ahead. Go for it.
Steve says, Dr. Zorba.
That's you.
You recently discussed psyllium use and its benefits. I have taken it daily for about 5 years, and it has been good to me. My question is about when or when not to take it with meds. I'm 81 and take 3 meds, a low-dose aspirin and a once-a-day vitamin for people 65 and older in the morning, and 2 at bedtime. I heard somewhere that you should not take meds with psyllium or not until at least 4 hours after. I've been taking mine at noon, but would like to take it in the morning or just before bedtime. Your input would be appreciated.
Psyllium. Now, how do you think psyllium is spelled?
Oh, I can just look at it on the sheet here.
Is it spelled?
P-S-Y.
It has a P. It has a P. Look at our language. Psyllium. There's no
P. Silent P.
There's no silent P in psyllium. It's so crazy. As far as I know, you can take it anytime you want to. I mean, you heard that it's 4 hours between that. Not at all. Now, let me go one step further. There's certain meds that you have to take on a completely empty stomach. You check with your pharmacist on that. And does psyllium interrupt that? Well, when in doubt, you check with your pharmacist, and if they don't know the answer, then you take the psyllium at a different time.
Okay.
In other words, that's what you do, because there may not be any tests with psyllium. But psyllium is a non-absorbed fiber supplement. It's not absorbed into the body.
Right?
Psyllium is Metamucil. Well, Metamucil is name brand psyllium.
Right.
And the reality is, as far as I know, you can take it. But once again, the pharmacists are great, and pharmacists are an underutilized resource. And when it comes to taking your meds, they'll give you the right answer.
All right. Good advice. Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at...
Zorba@WPR.org.
You had to think about that?
Yeah, I did.
That's just the email.
I did. That's right.
Yeah. We have mango sticky rice recipe coming up along with more of your calls, more emails, and more voicemails right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor over there. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to those calls, let's do the recipe. We have grilled mango sticky rice.
So first of all, mangoes are very, very common in all tropical areas.
I love mangoes.
And they're plentiful. And there is a mango season, really, that comes in the U.S. because they're, you know, they're grown in Mexico, mm-hmm. grown in South America, and they come up here. So they're one of those fruits that you can get on different times of the year, but they're really like strawberries. They bloom at a certain time.
Yeah.
And when you were a kid, could you get strawberries all year round? Do you remember
I don't remember. I mean, yeah, I ate strawberries, but
yeah,
I didn't know
yeah,
about
but strawberries were not available in Wisconsin yeah. for years except during strawberry season. But getting back to mangoes, because this is not a strawberry recipe, if you haven't tried mangoes during the season, try it. You're going to have to get mangoes from here. You can also get frozen mangoes. Did you know that?
Yeah, sure.
Store?
I eat those almost every day with
yeah,
like frozen. In a smoothie.
Yeah. Oh, so you like frozen.
I love mangoes.
You can use frozen mangoes. Okay, so start out with 4 cups of sweet rice. Now, you can use a medium grain sticky rice. That would be okay. If you go to an Asian grocery store, any good grocery store, you can get sweet rice. You can also use black rice. Black rice, which is very common in Indonesia, is also a sweeter rice. It's not really sweeter when you cook it, but it's stickier and it contains, kind of connects to the sweetness much better.
Okay.
Anyway, 4 cups.
4 cups sweet rice.
3 cups canned coconut milk, okay?
3 cups canned coconut milk.
That's right. Get the full-fat coconut milk.
Coconut milk.
You can get low-fat, but it doesn't taste as good. And if you're going to have something sometimes, just go for it. 3 cups of water.
All right. 3 cups of water. Teaspoon. Now, Zorba, what kind of water are we talking about?
We're talking about
just wet water?
Wet water.
Okay.
That's right. Wet water. In my house, that would be tap water from our well.
Perfect.
A teaspoon of sugar.
1 little tea sugar.
1/4 teaspoon salt.
1 1/4 little tea salt.
Okay. And then you need 2 pandan leaves. Again, you get
what
that at an Asian grocery store. It's a tropical leaf, and if you don't have it, that'll be okay. It's at an Asian grocery store or a good big grocery store that has Asian food.
All right, 2 pandan leaves.
Couple tablespoonfuls of cornstarch.
2 big tea cornstarch.
10 sweet orange mangoes, in other words, which mangoes kind of look orange, peeled, pitted, and sliced. And if not, you could use 2 to 3 packages of frozen mangoes.
Okay, 10 orange mangoes.
That's right.
Peeled, pitted, and sliced. I actually have a mango slicer at home, which
you
just
got
like,
does it work?
The middle, it's like an apple slicer, but yeah, it's got like a shape of a pit in the middle, and you
really
just go
like,
bam.
You really like mangoes, don't you?
I love mangoes.
So your kids love mangoes.
They love, oh man, they will fight over mangoes.
They will fight over mangoes. That's right. Mango fights.
Mango fights.
Is that like another Saturday Night Live, or would it be a frat
house? I don't know what that is.
Instead of a mango fight. 2 tablespoons of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
Some salt and pepper. And some roasted peanuts, about 1/4 cup if you have it.
About 1/4 cup. Coarsely chopped roasted peanuts
right.
is what it
right.
says
you
there.
Got it.
The whole
you got
thing.
It. That's it. The whole thing.
All right, let's do it.
So first of all, rinse the rice about 4 or 5 times until the water is cleared. That gets the carbohydrate coating around the rice off of there. Put the rice in a large pot. Add 2 cups of coconut milk, 2 cups of water, the sugar in there, and 1 teaspoon of salt, okay? And in meanwhile, place the pandan leaves, if you can get it on top of the rice, cover the pot, bring it to a boil over high heat, about 10 minutes just to get it up there. Turn the heat down and cook until the rice absorbs all of the liquid. Now, if you've got a rice cooker, do you have a rice cooker?
I don't think we do.
Oh,
no.
Rice cooker. Do you have an Instant Pot?
Instant Pot does the same thing, right?
Do the Instant Pot,
yeah.
And the Instant Pot will make it.
Yeah.
That's the best way. I've had a rice cooker since Penny and I first got married. They're awesome. They're easy.
Mm-hmm.
The Instant Pot does the same. That's what I would do. Now, in a small pot, take 1 cup of the coconut milk, remaining 1 cup of the water, about 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and the cornstarch that we put in there, the 2 tablespoons of cornstarch. Bring to a low boil and mix until the cornstarch is completely dissolved, then shut it off. Meanwhile, in another pot, coat mangoes with olive oil, sear it on a grill pan because you want to get it grilled on there. Spoon some of the sticky rice into each bowl. Top it with the seared mangoes and then drizzle that coconut slurry, which is thickened, over the rice and garnish with some sea salt and peanuts. And let me tell you something. You've got a delicious, delicious, interesting meal. The first time you make it, you're going to run into some little thoughts about how to get it, but you can do this. It's not complex. It's just 3 specific steps. And what's more, You can get a copy of this by going to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us through Facebook. And you don't even have to have, you don't even have to pay us money.
No.
You just have to pay us attention.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413.
And one more thing. It's our little Debbie.
That's your,
and
our that's little your gavel.
Debbie, our little Debbie, by the way, still smells, Sarah Carl. You see if you can still smell it. It's
yep,
been
I
sitting here
it.
Now for about 4.5 months.
Has it been that
it's
long?
Been about 4.5 months. It's on a paper plate. We will take a picture of this and put it on the website. And let me tell you something. You can still smell it.
Yep.
It still smells like something
still
you
sweet.
Want to eat during a nuclear holocaust.
Okay.
So put those, if you're a survivalist, in the basement with beans, gold, and little Debbies, and you will survive.
All right. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener in Whitehall, Wisconsin.
Hi, I just wanted to know what is the best source of protein for people with iron deficiency. I know there's like salmons, but is there a really good, healthy source without taking a whole bunch of supplements? Thank you.
You bet. Well, first of all, I want to talk a little bit about iron deficiency. If you've got an iron deficiency, you always need to know why you have it. So in other words, a lot of people with an iron deficiency have slow bleed into their colon or into their gut, and it's one of the things that we look at to make sure that they don't have colon cancer. In other words, come in, you're anemic, iron deficiency, we check that out. Let's make an assumption you don't have that. What's the best food to eat? Liver.
Really?
Yeah, liver's the best thing.
A lot of protein.
No, it's iron.
Oh,
liver
sorry.
Liver is filled with iron. Well, it does have protein.
Yeah.
It is iron protein. You're exactly
protein.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's high in iron. And that's what we used to give. We used to give liver years ago for people. You don't like liver. I can just tell from your face.
I don't know if I've ever. I've had liver pate.
Oh.
I don't think I've ever had like
a hunk
of liver.
No, every Thursday night we had liver in our house. My mother used to make it. Oh, it's delicious. Oh, I mean, but my kids won't eat it. And then there's chicken liver. Oh, in college it was really good. One day we're going to do a liver recipe.
I was just going to say, liver. We're never going to do a liver recipe.
No. We are going to do a dynamite liver recipe. I have an Asian liver recipe that I had from Hong Kong years ago, but we won't go into an Indian liver with a little bit Indian spices.
Maybe I can handle that.
You see? See?
Yeah,
see,
now I'm into liver.
But liver is there. And basically, when you're eating red meat, it's red because of iron. That's what causes it to be red. And then, of course, Popeye, if you're not into that, ate spinach because of its iron.
Hmm.
So you can look at that. But generally, animal products are going to be the best way to do that for iron deficiency. And of course, iron supplements are a good way to do it. But if you have an iron deficiency anemia, then you really have to have it checked out. See, you don't remember back in the day, the $64,000 question. You probably don't remember what, you know.
I've heard of the show.
It was brought to you by Geritol. Feel stronger fast.
Nice.
And Geritol, it was,
was
great.
Was it a powder?
But
what
a lot
was
of,
it?
No, it was a tonic, Geritol, for when you're older. And basically, it was a tonic that had two major things in it. It had iron in it. I mean, nobody had an iron deficiency. And it had alcohol. So if you had alcohol and iron together, you would feel stronger fast until the feds told them that they couldn't really advertise that.
That's interesting. Geritol.
Feel stronger fast. For those of you who are in my age group, you will remember that. And you'll remember the slogan was, feel stronger fast.
All right, 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462.
Even Brad is laughing.
He likes Brad, yeah. He's got a case of Geritol
there. Yeah, he wants to feel stronger fast.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Spokane, Washington.
Hi, Zorba. Question about diverticulitis and diet. I don't seem to see anything conclusive about what you should or should not eat, and I do try to maintain a high fiber using artificial fiber supplements, but I've tried, nuts and berries, and I've tried highly processed foods, and it seems like I still get an attack of diverticulitis every 6 months or so, And as opposed to having surgery to remove that portion of my intestine, I hopefully can correct this through proper diet. Appreciate your input on that. Thank you.
This is a good point. So first of all, diverticuli, little pockets in the colon, and they're very common. They're common for people who eat processed food, which is 100% of the United States
of
America
people. I know I do.
It's not 100%, but I mean, it's like 95%. It's also common in the Western culture with what we eat. It's less common in places where they eat high-fiber foods all the time, like in Central Africa. So we know that helping prevent diverticulitis really means having good insoluble fiber in your diet. Psyllium is a great way to do it. Metamucil is the name brand, a scoop every morning or one scoop twice a day for some people. They don't get diarrhea from it. Probably psyllium is the best thing you can do for diverticulitis to keep it from happening. Now, we used to say don't eat seeds and nuts, and the answer is wrong. But we gave that advice for 50 to 75, maybe 100 years, probably because some surgeon who took out a piece of the colon found a seed or a corn husk in there and said, I bet that's the problem. But studies have now shown conclusively that you can have nuts and seeds and popcorn. It's not going to affect your diverticulitis at all. So it's high fiber that makes a difference. And staying well hydrated and seeing if that works. And frankly, if you have an attack, you know, once every 6 months, it depends on how bad the attack is. You may eventually need surgery, but increasing that psyllium might keep you from needing surgery in the first place. And believe me, most surgeons do not want to work on diverticulitis and removing that part of the colon because sometimes another part of the colon will then produce problems. So unless you have really serious or complete problems, stick with psyllium, stick with a high-fiber diet, and then eat all the popcorn you want.
All right, I will. 800-462-74.
Do you like popcorn?
I love popcorn.
You love popcorn.
Who doesn't like popcorn?
Yeah, I like popcorn.
You like popcorn.
My wife loves popcorn.
Yeah.
You mean whenever there's popcorn around, you will eat it.
I will eat it. My kids fight over it. Yeah.
Your kids fight over
popcorn.
Yeah,
everyone's got to get their own bowl now. We tried sharing bowls.
Let me get
this
straight. They fight over popcorn and mangoes. So you get them both on the table
we should
at
get
the
some
same time.
Mango popcorn
That's
going,
a mango popcorn. You see, the ultimate for Carl's kids. I can just say, mango popcorn cereal.
Oh, they would. Oh,
instead
yeah.
of Cocoa Puffs,
there
mango
you go.
Popcorn cereal.
You're
and
onto
we don't
something.
Have to go that way.
You're onto something.
Yeah.
All right. 800.
The next big step.
Yeah, exactly. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right. Before the break, Zorba, let's take an email from a listener, Lynette, who listens to the show on KQED in San Francisco, California. Lynette writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, how do you know if foot shuffling is a sign of illness or an affliction of age? My husband is 72 and can be heard approaching at least a half a block away from the sound of his scraping feet."
Half a block away.
Half a block away. "If there is an obstacle in his path, like a raised root or rocks, a trip occurs, but so far not a fall. Going upstairs is also a problem. He ignores my kind words or suggestions as to how to walk a little less noisily."
Ignores the kind words. Well, foot shuffling can be a number of things. So one of the most common things with foot shuffling is Parkinsonism. It can be really the first significant sign. There can be some signs before that, loss of sense of smell, something called micrographia, where you write in very small letters. There are a number of things that can be a sign of Parkinsonism, but that can be one sign. Can also neurological problems, a whole bunch of different problems from alcoholism to vitamin B12 deficiency can also cause shuffling. So I think if he shuffles and he's falling, he needs to be seen by a doctor. He needs to be found out as to what it is. Because if you shuffle and fall and you break your hip, 25% chance you're going to be dead within a year or a year and a half when you break your hip. So that's just, you want to keep from falling at a certain age. So he needs a full evaluation as to why the shuffling is occurring. Now, why he's not following your advice? Hey, it's marriage. You don't follow
that's
the advice all the time.
That's a different topic.
That's a different, we will shuffle on to Buffalo, although this is San Francisco, and discuss that topic at a different time, but get him to a doctor before he does himself injury.
Do you have a healthy living question or comment for the show? Don't shuffle your feet. Send it to us. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email.
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have much more of the show to
much
come.
Much more.
Much more.
Shuffling on.
Shuffling right on. We'll have more of your calls. We'll tackle another interesting healthy living topic and more of your voicemails as well. So keep that radio or digital streaming service fixed and dialed in right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. The number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. But before we get back to those calls, let's do our healthy living topic here. There's some new research. This is out of UW La Crosse. This is about
local,
nature.
Local.
Local. Yeah, local research here. Yeah. Children's mental health and nature.
That's right. The importance of nature, you know, getting kids out for nature. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the study, and then I'm going to talk about how this really dovetails with some Japanese studies that were done years ago. So these were, they took a dozen kids from the age of 9 and 14 in La Crosse. So how old are your kids?
They're 5 and 8.
5 and 8. Okay, so they're older than your kids. So these are middle school, 14, could be high school kids. But these are kids who had mental health challenges like anxiety or depression, and that was the issue. So there were kids that had these problems within the school system. And they said, let's see whether or not forest bathing, I'm going to use that as a term. It's a Japanese term. Obviously, it's I'm not speaking Japanese, but forest bathing, being in Mother Nature. And they measured a few things. And what they found when they brought kids into the forest, gave them sort of kind of like they went into the forest. They didn't just say, well, go in the woods. They said, let's sit here. Let's look at Mother Nature. Let's sit with the trees. Let's be there. Let's relax in Mother Nature. They found kids actually had a significant decrease in their blood pressure. These kids did not have high blood pressure to begin with, but they didn't have normal blood pressure, so it even went down. Their energy level increased, their concentration level increased, their level of stress, it decreased. In other words, there were a number of things that they showed when they published the research in the International Journal of Mental Health Promotion and Psychological Well-being. And so the concept of slow forest bathing is slow, mindful immersion in nature. So even when I say that, can't you picture, Carl, what it must have been like, you know, what they must have done?
The way you say that, my blood pressure's already going down. But it's relaxing.
But I mean, we say it because it's relaxing. And the real issue is that encouraging children to spend time in Mother Nature can make a difference. So, for instance, during the wintertime, I have 4 kids and a bunch of grandchildren. I've got 7 grandchildren. In the wintertime, when there's snow on the ground, we love to go outside and play in the snow.
It's great.
Why? It feels good. It's good for us. So we forget about Mother Nature as being extremely important, especially for anxiety and depression. In this case, we've shown that it makes a difference with children. And kids, when they manifest depression and anxiety, they don't do it as adults. They may appear to be normal, and they may actually be anxious, and they may not be doing as well in school and other things. And so one method of really asking your child or doing things is just to keep anxiety away by spending time in Mother Nature. So what do you do with your kids?
We try to get outside as much as possible. It's hard. You know, it's easy to just, stick to the screens and devices. But but I do notice a change as soon as we go on a hike or do something. They're more relaxed.
Go on a hike. Yeah. That's exactly it. Go on a hike. And in the wintertime, dress properly and go on a hike. Obviously not in the middle in Wisconsin in the wintertime when there's a snowstorm or when there's a hailstorm. But if you look at weather, you can get outside 90% of the days or 95% of the days, no matter where you live, for some period of time. And sometimes there's bad weather. We think there's bad weather for the week, but there's only been bad weather for the day. So the bottom line with the study is, get your kids out into the forest, into Mother Nature. Into Mother Nature will make a big difference, may reduce their anxiety, and is good for their and your mental health.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to those phones now. Let's help out a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How can we help?
Well, I have a question for Dr. Pastor about gastroparesis. I had never heard of it.
So for people who don't know what it is, which is probably the vast majority.
I don't know what it is.
It's sort of slow gastric emptying from the stomach. That's what it means. Paresis means slowing, and gastro means, you know, the gastric system. So have you been identified as having gastroparesis?
Well, let me tell you really quick my little story here, what's been going on, and then you get to decide and tell me what you think.
Okay.
So about 20 years ago, I had 3 scans on my gallbladder. First one showed that it was working at 80%. The second one showed that it was not working at all. And then the third one showed that it was working great.
Got you. So you had some scans with some differing results. Got it.
Yes. fast forward 20 years. Mm-hmm. I get COVID, mm-hmm. then mono.
Mm-hmm. Oh, terrible.
Then COVID again.
Oh, awful. COVID, mono, COVID.
Yeah, and I got COVID the second time at Disney World, of all places.
Oh, yeah.
So since then, since that bout with COVID, I have never been the same. Mm-hmm. Chronic fatigue, chronic brain fog, mm-hmm. chronic diarrhea, chronic uh-huh. nausea. Uh-huh. The brain fog is unlike anything I've ever experienced.
And when was the last time you had COVID? How long ago?
About a month.
Okay. So you got 1 month brain fog, and it's 1 month ago for the last episode. Got it. Okay.
And the brain fog has been, I'll forget what, not only what I'm saying, but the context of everything that I was saying. You know how you can get that feeling of it's on the tip of my tongue.
Right.
And you surround right. kind of in the context.
Yeah.
I had no context.
You're right. Terrible. Awful.
I drive down roads and I think not only where am I going, but what road is this?
Right. No, it's, no, the brain fog of COVID can be just awful, awful.
Right.
So gastroparesis.
I was just going to say that the reason I thought that it was gastric paresis is because I was on Ozempic for a time. Mm-hmm. And I have lost it since October. I've lost 36 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Not on Ozempic, mm-hmm. but because I mm-hmm. cannot eat. Mm-hmm. I throw up every time that I try to eat. I'm not getting any nourishment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When I finally went to a gastroenterologist, he said, he looked at my previous scans and he said, well, who's been keeping an eye on that gallbladder, uh-huh. that polyp mm-hmm. in your gallbladder?
Uh-huh.
And I said, what polyp mm-hmm. in my gallbladder? Mm-hmm. He said, it showed up on your scan 23 years ago.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, then it's been 23 years since I had
right,
that.
Right, right. Well, gallbladder polyps are not critical and not unusual. And if the polyp were an issue, you know, after 20 years, you would know if it were an issue, but it can do things. But gastroparesis, where stomach just doesn't empty properly, and there are some medications that are used. There's an older drug called metoclopramide under the name brand Reglan. It's not name branded now, that can sometimes be useful. But the diagnosis is made by a gastroenterologist with some scans, and the treatment is usually to take the medications if you need it. And it can happen in a variety of gastric conditions and other conditions such as diabetes. But I don't think that's related to the brain fog of the COVID. And I haven't read that COVID and gastroparesis are connected together. They might be. I don't know if that's the case because, you know, COVID is still pretty new. Even though it seems old to us because there's been so much going on for 3 to 5 years, we don't understand long COVID. But brain fog a month later doesn't fit into the long range, but it still is. It fits into the awful range. You know, if you don't know the context of your conversation, that's got to be pretty scary.
It's extremely scary, mm-hmm. and it's very difficult for me in my job. You know, I work one-on-one with people.
What do you do? What do you do for a living?
I'm a therapist.
Oh, you're a therapist. Oh, it's got to be very difficult to follow conversations with people. Sure.
It's so embarrassing, and I just have to tell them at the beginning.
Right.
There may be times that mm-hmm. I'm searching for my words.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you it's not right. that I haven't been listening.
Right, right. And that's kind of important for people to know that it's COVID. Yeah. But getting back to the COVID, you've had COVID a couple times. You know, that's a lot.
Four times.
That's a lot of times to have COVID. You know, it's going to take you the brain fog. Usually about 90% of the time it clears. You know, after for people who have significant brain fog, it clears after 3 to 6 months. Might take 3 months, might take 6 months. Good evidence that it clears with most people. Chances are it's going to clear with you because 90, 95% of the people with long COVID, the brain fog eventually goes away. I don't think it's related to the gastroparesis. The polyp that was found in the gallbladder, if it were significant, you would know by now 20
right.
years later. Chances are in the 90 to 95% range, you are going to get better. So what's important here is diet and nutrition. So you want to follow a Mediterranean diet. Follow a typical Mediterranean diet. What you want to do is you want to access some increased citrus because even though citrus sometimes can worsen diarrhea, it's really good because it's got vitamin C and micronutrients. Variety of fruits and vegetables, pay attention to color. The more colorful it is, the better off it is. Make sure that you eat enough legumes, you eat enough beans in there. Follow the med diet. That's the best way to recovery for you. And also, don't forget about exercise. Just walking,
right.
some kind of exercise 3 days a week. Let your body do its natural healing.
Thank you so much.
so much. That is wonderful advice. I appreciate you very much. My husband will be so happy and thrilled because he loves seafood, and I do not. But I'm going to learn to love it.
There. Thanks much. Thanks for your call. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you so much for taking my call. You guys have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's take a peek into the Zorba Pastor On Your Health inbox and read a few emails. First up, we have Trixie in Neenah, Wisconsin, who writes, in relation to forest bathing, we talked about that, how do you feel about earthing or grounding mats? They plug into the ground plug in an electrical outlet and connect to a mat. The claim is that contact with the mat actually grounds you, similar to walking barefoot outdoors. Have you heard of these things? Grounding mats, earthing mats?
You know, why are we trying to industrialize Mother Nature?
You're saying just get out into the real thing.
Yeah, the real thing. I mean, grounded mats, I got to pay some money, got to plug it in, and it's supposed to be the same as Mother Nature.
Inner city, urban, like a very, it's hard to get into green space maybe. What about that?
Well, the reality is inner city or urban means you can get outside and walk. In Mother Nature. I mean, and are you far from a park? If you look at 90% of America, 95% of America, I mean, I've been in New York City.
Yeah.
There are parks in New York City.
There's a really big one.
Yeah, they're obviously, right. But there are a lot of little small parks in New York City. There are places where parks, and parks you often have people, you have kids who are playing and they're making noise. They're on swing sets and other things.
Anywhere, even that's beneficial, you're saying.
I mean, anywhere in America, you can get out into a park. And if you don't know and you're stuck in your screen, Google park nearby and you will find something. And forget about spending your money on grounding an electric mat that you plug in and this is the same as Mother Nature. Uh-huh.
That's a hard no from Zorba. All right. Finally, Zorba.
Really? Uh-huh.
No grounding mats.
You betcha.
Pete in La Crosse, Wisconsin writes, my dad was a cost accountant in the food industry. He reminds me that food in the U.S. is sold on the basis of weight and that the manufacturer's job is to put weight in the package. Besides water, salt and sugar are the cheapest ways to add weight to the package. Fats are expensive. Protein is expensive. Low-fat foods loaded with sugar and salt are typically the cheapest to make, and people will often pay more for them, believing that they are better for us. What do you think of this? Insider baseball.
I don't know if people pay more for them thinking that they're better. But he's got some very good point. I think the real issue is highly processed foods that are cheap and inexpensive to make that are tasty. We find them tasty, so we'll buy them, are good. The example. But it's not just weight. Let's look at a bag of Cheetos. Do you buy Cheetos based on weight? No. You buy Cheetos based on size. And we know Cheetos is obviously not the ideal food for you to eat. How about Cocoa Puffs? They're really not based. How much does your box of Cocoa Puffs weigh? You don't look at it that way.
It's all air.
It's a small, but I mean, it's a small box, a medium box, or the jumbo family size box.
Yeah.
So not everything is based on weight. Some things are based on hot air.
It's funny you bring up chips. Straight to my heart, Zorba. Always talking about Cheetos and Doritos here. Do you have a question or health tip for the good doc? Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, before we head out, Zorba, you may be surprised by this, but our listeners don't always agree with your sage radio wisdom.
Really?
You knew that.
No, I didn't.
You didn't know that. No. You are surprised.
I am surprised.
Okay.
I thought everyone agrees with me all the time.
Well, we made this segment just for these cases.
Oh, okay.
This is called Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following message came via our Facebook page from a listener, Greta, in New York. Greta writes, hi, Dr. Zorba and Carl, longtime listener, first-time caller. She's not really calling, though, right?
I know the phrase. I'm aware of it.
I just heard you tell a caller that soy is okay for those with thyroid issues. While that may be generally true, it's important to note that Synthroid levothyroxine users should avoid soy. The soy can block absorption of the medication. My 9-month-old has congenital hypothyroidism, and we have to be mindful to avoid soy formula. The more you know. Also, just wanted to add how appreciative I am for your show. I come from a family of doctors, including my dad and brothers, mm-hmm. one of which who is currently in his residency at the University of Wisconsin. Listening to your show makes me feel like we're back at the dinner table discussing our own healthy living.
Nice.
Thank you for carrying that out to a large audience, and stay well.
Nice.
That was nice.
Yes. Well, first of all, she brings up a good point mm-hmm. of medication. So when it comes to, her child has congenital hypothyroidism, and it turns out you've got to pay attention to the label of when you take the medication. And there's certain medications that have to be taken on an empty stomach. One of them happens to be thyroid medication, mm-hmm. and it may be that soy interferes with the absorption. And that's why going to your pharmacist and asking whether or not any of the medications have to be taken on an empty stomach is really important. And once again, reading the label and asking that, she brings up a good point. And it's not just soy, it's other things that can interfere with the absorption of thyroid medication.
Do you disagree with the good doc? No big deal. Just let us know.
No big deal.
Okay. Yeah, that was a nice disagreeing nice email, disagree. Wasn't it? Like a soft
very,
disagree.
It was a soft disagree.
With a nice that's happy right, ending.
That's
at the,
right. Happy
send,
ending.
Yeah,
that's
send us an like. Email or post on our Facebook page, or send us an email.
Zorba at WPR.org.
We're leaving that in. Yeah. Okay. Should we do this again next week?
I hope so.
Real loosey-goosey today. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime.
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 Anytime. To leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.